this talk, Wise Helping, is heavily based on this book. It's How Can I Help? By Ram Dass and Paul Gorman. The pages are getting pretty yellow. It was a big help to me. I studied it a lot when I was beginning my work with the hospice. For about 5 years, I tended to people who were dying. And I continue to use it as a reference because that situation continues. So you can see how much I use it from all the yellow tags. Only three of which I'm going to quote from today. In trying to ascertain what wise helping is, we can start with this title, How Can I Help? And consider when or even whether we should even presume to ask this question. Just who do I think I am? And who do I think I am in relation to them? Who are they to need my help? Am I so powerful and wonderful? And are they so needy? Maybe they don't need my help and would prefer to maintain their autonomy and their self-reliance. So when we set out to help, right away we have to deal with the delusion of self and others. Here's a quote that I love, particularly because of who wrote it. A human being is part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Albert Einstein. Last week in my talk, I talked about pure compassion, a state of mind springing from our recognition that all beings suffer just as we do. And compassion is a feeling with little or no attachments to self-interest. That's pure compassion. It recognizes that instead of us and them, there's just us, a complete unity of all that is, with no separation and no retreat into self-interest. That's the ideal embodied in Kuan Yin, who paid us a visit last week. And to quote myself, part of what our compassion needs to encompass is our own imperfection in feeling it. But we can set the intention to open our hearts wide enough to accept all that is true in the situation. and then we do the best we can. Last week, well, actually now 2 weeks ago, my wife Carla's mother had a stroke. We got the call from Carla's sister saying that she was alert, but we didn't know really what the situation was. So Carla and I prepared to fly to Ohio, and I had to recognize, I did recognize before I went, that this is very different than the kind of hospice situation that I was in 20-some years ago, because this is my family. These are my in-laws, and they have, you know, I've been a part of the family for 16 years. They're very loving people. I love them very much. But, you know, I'm not the blood child. And I am a lawyer and someone with a lot of hospice experience. And so I felt like I was bringing expertise. It felt like carrying a very heavy duffel bag along with me, this expertise. So I called Deb Kerr before I left and told her what I was feeling and that I was afraid that I would interfere. And she reminded me to set the intention every day if necessary to be of help and not to be intrusive. And as the hours of the days went by, I found a good guide in the Serenity Prayer. But instead of saying, may I have the courage to change the things I can, I said, to change the things I should. I can change a lot of things that are better left alone. And that was especially true in that situation. So I was seeking to have the willingness, basically, to change only those things that would be appropriate for me to do that. I set the intention not to act or say anything helpful until A, I was asked for help, or B, I saw an urgent need that I could meet. And one was, in fact, to get a legal document signed while Teresa's doctor would still certify her as competent to sign it. And then there were some other little things about bed care. And when I made these contributions, I saw how well that family as a whole processed and acted. And I realized that I didn't need to interject myself. I was there. I was, you know, part of the process. And then I just relaxed into letting go of my idea that I was helping. And now there's a fun story about a good friend of mine who is involved in the SIVA Foundation. And she took yearly trips to the Himalayas with her ophthalmologist husband to save people from blindness. It's a wonderful program that was started by Ram Dass and Wavy Gravy. And on one of the very first trips, my friend said she was very judgmental of how filthy the hospital was. And she just fumed, fortunately, silently, about this really grimy procedure room, and finally decided that she should wash the windows just to let a little more light into the room. So she worked away at it, and then all the windows fell out. They were literally being held in place by that dirt. Knowing what we should do takes wisdom and a letting go of the ego and the urges and attitudes that are attached to it. And my friend at this point readily recognized that she was just full of herself. We here in this room have an advantage or a head start by being meditators. In addition to being judgmental, you know, most of us can be separated from others by fear of the suffering that we see in them, that we see them going through, and by our own heart's reaction to that suffering. Part of the talk last week was about how these attachments get mixed in with pure compassion. And aversion to suffering is a very powerful mixture to go to turn compassion into a kind of hybrid of itself. Ram Dass says that we need to remember that our first impulse in wanting to help was kindness, and that natural compassion is our starting point. It's after that that we get in trouble. He recommends cultivating an unjudging awareness, because the attitudes and reactions that interfere with our wise helping usually follow away the moment they're owned up to. This is especially true if we already know how to access that unjudging awareness through our meditation. I think Ram Dass was writing a book to the rest of the population, but every time we come back to the breath, we recognize that we've been somewhere else. The ability to recognize that depends on our giving up judgment of ourself, that our attention has wandered. And when we're able to see these things, that's when our enlightenment begins. Ram Dass says that this unjudging awareness will notice our own reactivity, but it also brings into the light of awareness the actions and reactions of other parties in the situation. Now we can begin, perhaps for the first time, to hear them. Less busy pushing away suffering, less frenzied having to do something about it, we're able to get a sense of what they're feeling, of what they feel they need. We may be startled to discover that what they've been asking for all along is entirely different than what we've been so busy offering. All I want is for you to sit down here next to me. I don't care about the nurse. The IV is working fine. the bed is comfortable. Just sit with me. Quieter now, we can recognize such a need, often without it having to be expressed, perhaps even before it's consciously felt. We'll just come into the room and sit down and say, hello. As important as cultivating an awareness of the unity of the universe and an intuitive sense of the other's needs, it's really important to let go of the idea that we really know what they're feeling. There's another book, Zen in the Art of Helping, that I read in my hospice days. In it, David Brandon says, I cannot tell whether what moves inside my heart is similar to that which moves inside yours. I can share it, but must be careful not to drown your grief and sorrow with my own. So at this point, we've accumulated a list of do's and don'ts, and we've hardly begun to do anything helpful except sit down and say hello. And I think I spent at least half of my time over the years with people who were dying just doing that, just sitting there holding a hand. But watching for our own ideas and attitudes that can mislead us in trying to help is essential to the practice of wise helping. When we're with someone who can use our help, the first step is to try to be truly present. Not just really occupying a space next to them, but being open to whatever arises. That includes all our thoughts and feelings, as well as what our senses perceive about what's happening. Remember, it's our thoughts and our feelings that interpret our perceptions. With all of the hundreds of hours that I've spent at the bedsides of people who are terminally ill, I could see in their faces that they could tell when I was not fully present. Their expressions were guarded when I was preoccupied. But when I was totally there with the two of us, their faces relaxed. And often so did their whole bodies. And that's really an important help in pain control, to relax like that. I've often said that what we all want most is to be fully seen and accepted. That's what I brought to those bedsides when I let my mind and my heart settle into it, slowing down and just being there also lets us see the world that others occupy, especially people who are ill. Theirs is a slow and stationary world. If we just blow into it and through it, we don't really see it. We need to stop and spend time there. That's also true in helping people who aren't ill. If we just settle in and listen, we begin to understand their situation and hear what they really need. Ram Dass points out that helpers are not the only people who who are attached to their ideas and feelings. Those whom we're there to help may be attached to stuff too. He tells of listening to a woman talking on and on about her annoying daughter who was running wild, raising all kinds of trouble. He suspected this was a story she had told often, probably to many different people, and she'd become stuck in it. So when she finished, he just said, "Right." She said, "No, you don't understand," and told the story all over again. And he said, "Right," again. The woman went silent, and after a while she got a wry smile and said, "You know, I was kind of a hellion when I was a kid, too." Ram Dass says she then just let it go. He calls what he did not getting stuck in what the other person is stuck in. Calling someone on their being stuck is a tricky approach, by the way, which shouldn't be tried until you've become pretty experienced with deep listening and can feel the difference between really hearing the other person and feeling the urge of your own reactions. But just not getting stuck yourself in what they're stuck in, even without calling them on it, can help them see another approach to their issues. The more you do the practice of service, the deeper you go into your own attachments. This is the practice. Ironically, doing this can also cause burnout. There are times when the heart just isn't open enough, or we can't get ourselves out from between us and the other person. And we end up having a pretty bumpy ride trying to just bring them a cup of tea. It can be doubly exasperating to see, as Ram Dass puts it, that the seeds of burnout are often sown in how we enter into the helping act and in what we bring with us, our motives, our needs, the models we have for ourselves. Having acknowledged these attachments when we started out to help, like I did before I went to Ohio, we might expect them to be gone after we've been helping for a while. But instead, the various situations we're in can stir all of these attachments up again. And at that point, it can be hard to acknowledge them. Often we'd rather deny or hide our needs to look responsible or experienced, useful, powerful, moral, worthy, and needed, and so forth, as Ram Dass puts it. Or perhaps we're in some role and we think that that role permits us to give these impulses free range. We always have to watch out for mental fabrications like these. But as always, that same non-judging awareness will help us resolve this conflict between the tensions of ego and the ease of acceptance. Gradually, this letting go reduces the power of these attachments over us. In another book of his, Ram Dass said that it supercharges our spiritual growth. And in fact, that was the initial inspiration for me to do hospice work, it can be a lot of work, a lot of introspection. But I was once in a group that had a weekend retreat, and the topic came up, do we need to be enlightened before we do service? And the answer is no. Service is practice in being enlightened. We see these attachments and learn how to not let them provoke unwise helping. One of the things that can contribute to burnout, both for us and the people we're trying to help, is agendas we don't even know we have. There's a story in How Can I Help about a woman who had her mother move in with her after a stroke so she could care for her mom during her rehab. They had a long history of fighting, and the daughter's idea was that while her mother was there, they could fix all that. Well, it turns out the mother was a real champion fighter and just loved winning a row. And she could push all of her daughter's buttons. So the reality of having her mom there was a lot different than the daughter imagined. One day, things really blew up over a hard-boiled egg. And the battle just kept raging, covering everything that was going wrong between them. And as the daughter tells this story, in the middle of the fight, the mother stopped short and said, "Why are you doing all this for me anyway?" It sort of hit me, and I started to list all the reasons. They just came out. I was afraid for her. I wanted to get her well. I felt maybe I'd ignored her when I was younger. I needed to show her I was strong. I needed to get her ready for going home alone, old age, and on and on. I was amazed myself. I could have gone on giving reasons all night. Even she was impressed. "Junk," she said when I was done. "Junk," I yelled. Like, boy, she had made a real mistake with that remark. I could really get her now. "Yes, junk," she said again, but a little more quietly. And that little more quietly tone got me. And she went on, "You don't have to have all those reasons. We love each other. That's enough." I felt like a child again. Having your parents show you something that's true, but you don't feel put down. You feel better because it's true and you know it, even though you are a child. I said, "You're right. You're really right. I'm sorry." The mother said, "Don't be sorry. Junk is fine. It's what you don't need anymore. I love you." As we continue to help others with wise intent, we bring into our own accepting awareness more and more of our self-oriented motives and attachments. We become increasingly adept at simply noting it, not getting lost in it. Quoting Ram Dass, by simply witnessing the character and conflict of our reasons for helping out, then, we are making room for an essential change of perspective. Our actions are less hostage to our needs. We can call upon a deeper, more universal source of action, one that is steady, reliable, and less likely to burn out. Service as practice develops our awareness of our unity with all beings, and with it comes metta, love. And like that mother told her daughter, that's enough. Thank you.